Hello and welcome to the Local Economic Development Podcast.
Hosted by Sean Cunningham
and Jörg Meyer-Starmer.
For other programs in this series, please take a look at www.ledcast.net.
This is the first show in a new series, a series where we are going to look at tools, specific tools that you can use in local economic development. In this episode, I'm going to talk with Colin Mitchell, who is an LED practitioner in South Africa. Hi, Colin. It's nice to have you in this program.
Hi, Jörg. It's great to have you back in South Africa, and it's a pleasure to be part of your podcast.
So what we wanted to talk about today is workshops. Why do you do workshops? How do you do workshops? And especially, how do you prepare for a workshop, since this is something that LED practitioners need to do quite a lot? So maybe let's start with the first point. Why do you do a workshop in the first place? So like in your situation, you're now involved in a couple of practical activities. You are going to run a series of workshops in the near future. Why did you decide to actually do workshops?
Yeah, workshops remain probably one of the very best ways of getting information and from a lot of people and getting different opinions. In fact, putting a workshop together is one of the trickier things you can do. It's often much easier to have interviews with people and consolidate information that way. But workshops have a way of unearthing hidden gems and getting people who would not normally speak to each other involved in conversation. And if you handle it properly, the amount of information you get, the quality of information you get is unsurpassed.
So what is your experience when you conceptualize a workshop? So let us assume that you're running some LED process and you have decided that there ought to be a workshop. Maybe you've talked to a couple of people. Maybe you have an idea that now it's the time to get a couple of stakeholders together to achieve something specific, some kind of alignment, some kind of agreement, or just a brainstorming on what to do. So what are some of the issues that you consider when you sit down and contemplate how to actually design that workshop?
Jörg, I think probably the key issue to be absolutely sure of the purpose. In fact, I think it's probably a good thing to write down a statement of purpose before you start, and then follow that up with a series of very specific objectives. Three, probably four objectives that you have to achieve before you'd be satisfied with the outcome of the workshop. Those objectives would then, I guess, also make it easier for you to work out exactly who should be there and get a cross-section of the people who are either directly involved or have some kind of influence over the topic.
So in such a case, to what extent do you yourself get involved in actually defining who needs to be involved in a given workshop? Or asking the other way around, to what extent do you leave it to somebody else, your local host, your local champion, to determine who is going to be invited?
I think the key issue in these workshops is not to take it on your own and do it yourself. It's to set up a small design team of people who are directly involved with the project itself, remembering that you are most often coming in as an advisor and a facilitator to help the local people achieve their purpose in the workshop. And one of the best ways of doing that is one of the packet techniques which you've been involved in for many years, and that's to get the people involved to write out a number of cards and organize them in such a way that they can identify all the stakeholders, the relationships, and people that possibly would not normally be considered in the way in which you set up the workshop.
So what is implicit in what you say is that you conduct a workshop kind of not at the start of the process when you don't really know who the stakeholders are. So you would really start a process by engaging people individually, talking to different kinds of stakeholders. And once you've formed kind of an opinion, kind of a picture, who are the relevant players in a given location, and when you get the impression that it might actually be useful to have them talk to each other, only then you think about a workshop. Is that right?
Yeah, I think you're absolutely right. Typically, the conversation around the workshop and who should be there and what you expect to achieve would start probably as long as 2 months before you actually consider having the workshop. You'd probably spend the first day with with the host or the patron, if you like, of the process that you are engaging in, and identify a couple, two, maybe three people who are highly influential or have a vested interest in the program itself, and you would engage them in finding out who could and should be spoken to. They'll have a far better insight into the people in the local community and influence of that community.
Right. So let us assume that you, in your process, have actually defined relevant stakeholders. You have gone beyond the usual suspects. You have identified people who do not necessarily meet each other every other day anyway. You don't only have the usual people from the Lions Club or the Golf Club or whatever, but in fact a rather mixed crowd of people who you think are relevant for a given subject within your LED process or to drive your LED process. And now you have determined that you want to have them in a workshop to, well, for instance, align expectations or agree on what the LED process ought to be about. What is crossing your mind then? So what are you thinking about when you sit down and start to design the structure of a workshop?
When designing a workshop, I think it's always important to really have in the front of your mind at every point in time exactly what you want to achieve. And you set small targets for each part of the workshop as you consider it. And it also means that when you're informing people and inviting them to the workshop, you can be quite clear as to what's going to be expected of them, what contribution they're going to need to make. And it also allows them to start thinking about the process that they're going to be faced with.
What you effectively say is that you need to have a very clear idea quite some time before the workshop so that you can communicate it adequately to the participants, to the people that you're going to invite, so that you manage their expectations properly. How do you avoid mismanaging expectations in the build-up to a given workshop?
In fact, there are three types of people that invariably would come to a workshop. There are those that are paid to be there because it's part of their job, and these are invariably people who are in the system and need to be there. They are often business people and very important people whose insights you really need, who are extremely busy, and you really need to invest quite a lot of time in communicating with them. And then there are other people who have an interest, and in this I think of a group of people that are often left out of workshops. Those would be the young adults in a community that you tend to ignore their opinion. But also, I think one of the most important things in a workshop is how you go about inviting them. We've had workshops where the person who's sending out the invitations and making the follow-up phone calls and sending the emails tends to measure themselves on the number of people they get there, they get to the workshop. And in fact, they're often responsible for half of the expectations or mis-expectations that are created by spending time and trying to coerce or influence people to come to workshops when it's quite clear they don't want to. They then create half of the impossible expectations.
Now, looking at practical techniques to avoid that, I seem to recall that you had a very interesting approach in terms of actually doing that, organizing communication with stakeholders in a specific way to minimize the risk of mismanagement of expectations.
Over the years, we've found that the stakeholder mobilization and inviting people to workshops is probably will make and break a workshop if you don't get it right. And in the past, we've actually deployed somebody almost full-time to take care of invitations. Invitations are written down, the objectives are stated, the purpose is stated, and what we hope to achieve is also stated in the invitation itself. These invitations then are firstly are sent out by email, often fax, although fax is no longer as widely used as emails. We also then telephone people to confirm that they have received the emails or the faxes and to explain more about the workshop. This is the area where expectations can be mismanaged, in that a person would often give an impression that they're not really keen on it or they are busy and it's something that's just going to interfere in their programs. And often the temptation of the person on the phone is to try and convince them that they really do need to come rather than of the importance of the process.
So what you say is that, that sometimes there is this temptation of the person who is inviting to make promises that are quite unrealistic just to keep the people on the other side, on the other end of the phone happy and to make sure that they say, okay, I'll come to your workshop.
Again, you're absolutely right. There are two things that will happen. One, the people with no intention at all of coming will say yes, they'll come in order for you just to get off their back so that you stop pestering them, so they'll come with no intention of coming. The other one is that they will come based on the expectation of the person who made them some kind of promise and led them to believe that there was a very specific objective that they could achieve by coming to the workshop. That is a risk that you do face and needs to be very carefully managed. The person who's making who's doing the invites and is managing this process must at all costs avoid feeling that their performance is going to be judged based on the number of people who turn up, but more on the people that come up really prepared to participate and understanding what it is that they have to contribute.
Some of the key points you just mentioned are you need one person, preferably just one person, that is in charge of inviting. That person needs a very clear brief on what to explain to the people that are invited to a given workshop. That person needs to make sure that no promises are made that cannot be held just to keep invitees happy or to increase the probability of them turning up. And linked to that, ultimately, you don't really want to call people cold, but rather try to make sure that people are kind of prepared and know that something is going on and maybe already have some kind of interest in showing up at the workshop that you try to organize.
Again, there's a very valuable point in that. Often you misjudge. You think you have got the right person that's issuing the invitations. And in fact, the person that's doing the invitations maybe is a very committed and dedicated person when it comes to follow-up. But sometimes we find that they are not really the right person and they don't have the necessary credibility to influence people to come. In this case, it's often really worth your while to spend some time talking to people in the community and you find out who the real influencers are. These are sort of the people that, if they invite you to a workshop or if they invite other people to a workshop, they have that level of credibility and that level of influence that if you can convince them and get them on your side, it's often very much easier to get people, the right people, to the workshop. And also, if you do it in the correct way and you get these influencers on your side, often you can get them, in fact, to make the first introductory phone call to some of the people that you would not normally have got to or people that you sometimes don't even think about.
Just to confirm this, so that would practically mean that, for instance, in a real case, you would personally go out and try to find some of those people who are connectors, who are movers and shakers in their respective community and convince them that it's a worthwhile effort and make sure that they, well, at the next Lions Club meeting or at the next church meeting or whatever, highlight to their peers that something exciting is going on. And then only after that you would have, well, you contract somebody, as you said earlier, you contract an individual person who is then calling up all those people basically to reconfirm what they have heard already and just to agree specifically with them when exactly the workshop is going to take place, where it is going to take place and how long it is going to take.
I think you'd probably do both. If you've done your job properly and you've set the scene correctly, the person who you've got that's doing the invitations would by necessity have some local connections, whilst you probably wouldn't have chosen them in the first place. But in every case, there are people just outside of their sphere of influence with whom that person just might not have the credibility. And it's very important then that you yourself or your design team does go out into the field and identify and talk to people and find out those connectors who were not on the radar of that person and make sure that you then feed them back into the communication process. And having broken the ice, the person who is issuing the invitations probably then is quite capable of managing the continuation of the invitations, of sending out the emails and doing the follow-up phone calls.
Okay, great. Thanks a lot. So that was some ideas and some principles around how to invite for workshops, how to manage expectations properly, and how to make sure that a reasonable group of people and the right group of people turn up at a given workshop. Thanks for your input, Colin.